Well, good afternoon. How is everybody? Yeah, ham jambo. Oh, that was close. Dave was close, but that, I guess this is like 25 now, 25 for 25. No one responded to me when I asked that, but so I'm going to teach you a Swahili word today, okay? I'm going to say ham jambo, and you say hatu jambo, okay? You ready? Ham jambo. Perfect. So basically, I just said, what's your news? And you guys said, we don't have any news. And that's how we greet each other in public settings in Kenya. But pretty much, I don't think I need to introduce myself and go through that whole thing so much. I hope not. But entering into our 12th year in Masai Mara. So a lot of things are going on over here. I tell folks, basically what I'm doing going around is still not much different. Still showing a video and afterwards talking about the video and trying to explain a little more about the ministries that are going on. And before we left in July, we left July the 18th to come home. It's a very, very busy term. We had over 80 visitors the last term and a lot of different things happening, a lot of good things. And I had three pastors staying all night with me on July the 3rd. Because we were having the governor and 3,000 people come into our mission station the next day. And so the bishop of our area and two other pastors is who it was. And I always like to show the videos to the Kenyan folk just so they can, you know, I'm not misrepresenting anything. They can see what we're doing, what we're showing in the States. And so I showed the video that you guys are about to see, and I'm watching their face as they're watching it. And they weren't smiling or anything. And I'm thinking, what's going on here, you know? And at the end of it, they said, but Travis, you didn't talk about this and this and this and this. And I said, guys, we have maybe 30 or 40 minutes in a church in America, and we got to hit the highlights. And they were abhorred at the thought that we only had church for 30 or 40 minutes in America because they go 4 to 5 hours a Sunday. And so all that to say, and oh, I always forget, before we left Sekinani, our church said, please greet every church in America, okay? So I'm giving you their greetings. So you guys receive those greetings. You have to do this if you do. And then you send them back. Okay, I will take those greetings. 25 down, 300,000 to go to greet every church in America. So basically, I'm going to share this video, and then I'll get back up in a few minutes and talk more about different things that are going on. Things that have happened since we've come home that is actually starting over there that I had no way of knowing to even put in the video. So we'll talk about that. And if you guys have any questions, please write them down, ask us, you know, we'll try to answer them. So, and I forget to say it every time, but I'm going to remember for you guys, all those animal pictures, Summer took every one of those. So yeah, crazy. So that's the church right now. Actually, that's the church. Not right now, obviously, a year ago, I guess now. But anyway, church continues to grow. I always tell people, even this morning when I spoke, I like to tell people the reason that we are there is not for the projects. The projects are good and all that, but the primary reason we're there is to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, to preaching and teaching of his word. Is first and foremost. There's really no other reason that we are there. And so any of the things, projects, schools, children's homes, all these things that we do is very calculated to help to know if we will be able to reach people where they're at and build relationships with them so that it will give us an opportunity to share the gospel with them. And if it doesn't, then we don't do it. And so I always like to put that in there because sometimes you can be really outweighed one side or the other. And so that's just right out the gate for you. But our church right now, we have about 90 adults coming to 100 adults on a Sunday morning and still about 120, 125 little people, kids that are coming on a Sunday morning. People are very excited to come now. It's been fantastic since we've been gone. We've been gone now about 6 months. We've been away. It's the first time in the history of our mission station that there's not been a missionary on the station. And so our people had to really pull it together, which was really fantastic because they've done a very good job at it. Now, they are very tired, and they are very happy that we're coming back. And I said, I will be back next year, and they thought that meant January 1st. And so they're a little upset right now that we are not back there. But I've been so encouraged because our guys have really stepped up. And my translator that translates from Swahili to Maasai every Sunday with me, his name is Tigas. And he has preached now 11 of the 29 Sundays I've been gone. He has taken 11 of those. The children's home dad, we have a family in there. He has taken 11 of those. And the other seven has been split between two of our male school teachers. And so I get calls. I get 15 or 20 calls a week right now, but that's okay because they are doing it. And so when we get back, we will allow them to keep taking a little more piece of that pie as we get back because we've seen that they can do it. And that's the ultimate goal, is to work yourself out of this and get it to where they're functioning is that. But very exciting to see that. And I love, you know, Renee and Dave, you've seen this and heard this, but I always love once we sing a song here and we love singing English, and we've been in so many different crazy worship things this year. I don't even know what's going on anymore in churches. But anyway, I like to share what it sounds like in our church on a Sunday morning. Just a really brief clip so you can hear what it sounds like. And that's what it sounds like in church on Sunday morning. Pretty cool, huh? I mean, I like it. Yeah. Yes, I'm wearing a robe, and yes, I'm wearing a collar. Okay, that is not normal. I don't do that. Okay, this was a ceremonial thing, but it was a big day because our church is 19 years old now, maybe 20 years old, and in the life of our church, it's never had a pastor. And to be a pastor in Kenya, a licensed pastor, you have to be licensed by AIC, the African Inland Church. And so the former missionaries were not licensed, which means you cannot baptize or do the Lord's Supper legally in Kenya unless you are licensed by the African Inland Church. Some of the pastors in our region and the bishops, they said, Travis, we would like to license you so that Sekinani AIC can finally become a church rather than a preaching point, is what they put it in their terms. And so in June 2015, they wanted to do this, and we did it. We had other people out. Remember I said we had tons of visitors? And so, of course, they got tons of pictures of me in this robe, and it was funny. I think they're using it against me. You know, it's something to use against me in the future. Look at Travis, you know. But it was a big day. We had like 700 people show up. Everybody from the community was very curious to see what was going on. It was a very fun day. It was a very interesting day for us. The guy in the red there, he's the assistant bishop of our whole area. He had to come and conduct the ceremony. But it was a great day. Just the gospel was shared with all of those people. It was just a great day. And now AIC Sekinani is officially a church. And as you saw, we had the baptisms there, and no other pastor. In the past, when we've done baptisms, we would have to call a pastor from the region, and we'd have to pay for him to come 3 or 4 hours and get him there, put him up for lodging overnight, feed him, all of that stuff. It's not bad, but I'm just saying it was a headache because we had to plan baptisms around his schedule. And then what about Lord's Suppers? It's a mess. And so in the past, they're supposed to do the baptisms themselves, but they've been kind to us, and they will stand beside the tank or whatever and let us do them. But now we didn't have to do that, and it was great on January 1st last year is when we did the baptisms, and it was wonderful. It was just our church like it should be, you know. And right now we have 16 that are in the new believers baptism class. I had one or two lessons before we left to do, and we'd have been finished, and I just couldn't do it because it was crazy. And when I get back, Lord willing, we'll have 16 people to baptize. So it's really exciting. It'll be a big day. And I always like to share about some of the folks over there and their testimonies because it's just beautiful. And this young man, his name is Mike, and Mike was coming to church as a direct result from a young man named Moses. And please remember Moses' name, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But Moses has grown up basically around our mission station. He's not been one of our kids or anything like that. But there's a picture when Moses was about this tall, standing, you know, like the Masaidu, one leg and a, you know, a spear while I'm finishing concrete. That's how long for my shop. That's how long Moses has been around. Shared the gospel multiple times with Moses throughout the years and have really heavily been doing that in the last couple years. Started inviting Moses to come to church, and Moses didn't want to come to church alone. So Moses picked up a buddy, Mike, and started bringing him to church. And after about 3 weeks, we finished service one Sunday, shutting the doors. Mike's standing there, and Mike says, "Travis, I need to talk to you." I said, "Okay." So we go back in, we sit down. He said, "I've been coming for 3 weeks. I go home. I can't sleep at night. I can't think straight. What you're saying is running through my mind. I don't know what's going on with me. Help." That's what he said. I said, "Well, let me explain a little bit of what's possibly going on with you." And I was able to share the gospel with Mike again. And Mike's like, "Yes, yes, that's what I want. Yes, what do I do?" And, you know, and all of that. But he became a believer that day. The Lord changed his heart. And I remember him saying, he said, "Everywhere my foot treads, I want to be a light for Jesus Christ." I mean, it was just a beautiful testimony Mike had. So Moses doesn't have an unbelieving partner to come to church with anymore. So he goes and invites a young man named Jackson. And you notice there was a picture that said Jackson and Jacqueline in there. So the same scenario, the same thing happened. Jackson and his little wife were coming to church with Moses. 4 or 5 weeks goes by, same thing. He comes up and he says, "I don't know what's going on here. My wife's different. I'm, you know," it was this whole thing. So once again, I tell people, Moses is the best evangelist of our church, and he's not even a believer, you know? But please, please pray for Moses. It would be great if the Lord would save him. His wife is a believer now. They're expecting their first child in about 2 months, so that'll be right, you know, after we get back in a few weeks. And he calls me like twice a week. I think the Lord may be working on his heart, but please pray for him, because it would be fantastic the Lord would save him. He's now the night guard at the school, so we have him around all the time now, and he's being influenced heavily by everything that's going on. So it's been really great. This is Mama Maria. And Mama Maria was coming to church as a direct result of the Widows and Orphans dinner that we do on Wednesday night. And I'll talk a little bit more in detail about that in a second. But basically, with the Widows and Orphans, what we do is it was a ministry started for the people in our church to be able to minister to their community. And looking around, we said, "How can our people best minister?" And we said, "Oh, what better way than to reach out to the people in their community, these widows?" And I didn't realize there were so many widows in our community. But anyway, they come and we feed them very well. And we, as they're eating, we sit down at the table with them. We try to get to know who they are, find out more about their life. Some of these ladies come from miles and miles away, hour walk, and they sit there until it's time to eat. And I pray for them corporately at the end. And I always say, as most of us do, in Jesus' name, amen. So Mama Maria had been coming to church for several weeks. And she comes up to me one Sunday and she says, "Travis, you come and you sit with us and you talk and you always pray. And you pray when you finish, you say, 'In Jesus' name.' Who's Jesus?" And it's amazing to us to sit here and think there's still people around the world who have never heard about Jesus. I'm telling you, they're out there. They're probably becoming more and more right out your door here, to be honest with you. But so I was able to share the gospel with Mama Maria. She said, yes, that was for her. Jesus changed her heart and her life. And I always like to note, and people don't realize this, because when we in America take pictures, what do? Smile. Yeah, cheese, whatever. So you're smiling. Over there, the Maasai do not smile. It is not normal for them to smile. Typically, when I take a picture, I say, "You look like you're going to jail. Look at this." And then when they start laughing, I'll take a picture again to get a picture. That was not prodded by this. This is just the pure joy of having Jesus Christ in her life. That's all it is. A really, really encouraging story to me was we had a video crew that came out for 10 days with us, a big production deal. It's another story. But anyway, we get there on Wednesday night for our first night there was the Widows and Orphans dinner. And afterwards, we come outside and the video crew was wanting me to explain to them, you know, stuff, you know, what sales, always the terrible stuff. But anyway, they're like, explain to us what these bracelets are on the mama's legs and why do they do this? And they tie their belts and knots to ward off the evil spirits from their children, and they worship their dead ancestors on their ankles, these bracelets and stuff, and I'm explaining all of that, and the mamas are explaining it to me, and I'm translating it back to the video, and the guy filming pans over, because Mama Maria's standing there, pans over, and he goes like this, and he says, "What about her?" And she had just enough English to hear that, because she sails at the gate all the time. Is she says, "No, no, no, Jesus Christ is enough for me, and that's all I need." And it was just glorious. I mean, it was awesome. She got rid of all of that bondage, these belts and these ankle things. And so Mama Maria is awesome, and she'll be one of the ones that'll be getting baptized when we get back. This old man is Mzee Q, is his name. He is 94 years old, and the life expectancy in Kenya is 56. So he's made it a long, long time. Is there anybody in here in their 20s? Any ladies? Okay. That's about double everywhere we've been this year, just so you know. I don't know where the 20-year-old people are going. But okay. So Mzee Q is 94. He has four wives and 32 children. His youngest wife is 24. His youngest child is 3 years old. And so just imagine, Mzee Q is not a believer. Once again, have been for years sharing the gospel with him. He still herds his little calves into our property every morning, all 30 of them, even though we have a fence now. He still brings them in. And what do you say to a 94-year-old man? You let him bring them in, you know? And so he sits under the tree and he lays there for hours on end. And I think that's it. That's it for him. He's under a blanket and there's no movement for 3 or 4 hours. He's done. You know, that's what I think. It's over for him. And I'm the grave digger in our community, so I'm going to dig eventually Mzee Q's grave. And then he'll start moving a little bit, and here he is up again, still herding these little calves around. But please pray for Mzee Q. He is a dear friend. He is coming to church now. He sits right on the front bench with the other old people and sleeps like they do through the service. And funny story about Mzee Q is he was there for the licensing service. And he's sitting there and he's looking around at all these people. And he pipes up and he says, "This is a party. Where's all the beer at?" So that's Mzee Q, you know. That's where he's at, I guess. But please pray for him. He's something else. This is Mama Chrissia, and there's tons of stories about Mama Chrissia. And I didn't put this picture in for Mama Chrissia as so much as what she's holding. And what she's holding is what's called a proclaimer. And it's another ministry that we've involved ourselves with. That's a great ministry. It's a Faith Comes by Hearing ministry. It's basically an MP3 player with a solar panel on top of it. And so what they do is we've been able to put the Maasai Old Testament, New Testament. We've put the Maasai New Testament on here. And it's crazy. They'll put them on top of their dung huts. And they're charging during the day, and it's playing, and you go over somewhere, and the Word of God is being read in the Maasai language just in the villages. I mean, it's really, really a neat little device. And so about 2 months ago, I contacted one of the former missionaries that was there, and I said, "Didn't we used to have the Old Testament somewhere?" And he said, "Yeah, it's on my computer." I said, "Please send that to me." So I got this little micro SD card that was mailed to me in the mail that has the Maasai Old Testament on it. And when I get back, I'll be able to plug the Old Testament in for all these people so they'll have a complete Bible. I mean, it's amazing. It's truly like you guys carry your Bibles. It's their Bible. 84% of our community is illiterate, can't read, can't write. It is their Bible. And they are amazing with these things, how they memorize things, because you'll be talking about something and they'll say, "Oh, wait a minute," and click it, and it's right on the verse that you're talking about. It's pretty impressive because they've memorized where it's at, the different verses and things. It's really cool. But I will tell a quick story about Mama Chrissy. I may have told you guys this before, I don't know. But when Savannah was born, Laura had stayed at home and hadn't come to church for a few weeks. I guess that's standard when having a newborn or whatever, especially in the bushes of Africa. So first Sunday there, Laura's carrying Savannah wrapped up in church, and Mama Chrissia comes over and she pulls the blanket back, looks at her and goes, and spits all over Savannah. Yes. Yeah, you're freaking out. I know. And so that was Mama Chrissia's way of blessing the child. And so there's so much stuff with Mama Chrissia. I think I told last furlough about the kids and how they're so good around Mama Chrissia. And imagine 125 little people without their parents at church. And you can just imagine the noise and all that would be. And then Mama Chrissia shows up and these kids are little angels. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? And so I see this happen one time, go over to one of the little girls and said, what is the deal when Mama Chrissia comes in? And they said, oh, if Mama Chrissia catches you being bad, she'll stick a straight pin through your nose. It's effective. I mean, it works. So I'm not advocating that, but it works, okay? But Mama Chrissia is a dear, sweet lady. So this is the widows and the orphans dinner. Once again, we do that every Wednesday night. And before we left, I was shocked. We had 102 widows show up the last Wednesday we were there. I couldn't believe we even had that many widows around, but we do. And basically what we're trying to do, it's such a man's world that a woman's value is very little. A cow oftentimes means more, has more value than a lady, a woman. And these ladies, they build the houses that are manure, you know, and mud. They carry the water from whatever distance it is on their heads. They carry the firewood to keep it going. If their kids go to school, they get the job or do whatever they can, sell beads to pay for that kid to go to school. And the dad's just basically responsible for the animals and basically means he sends little Junior out who's five and he sleeps under the tree all day. That's how it rolls. And so now these ladies don't have husbands, and it's, believe it or not, it's even tougher sometimes on them because they have to do even more with the animals now. So we just wanted to give them a break. I mean, we all need a break every now and then, and they never get a break. And so we feed them really, really well. We feed them fruit and bananas, and we kill a goat. And we, I mean, it's like a big deal, a big meal. And then we do door prizes when they come in. Every one of them come in. I give them a number. And I do like seven big gifts in buckets with pictures of animals on it. So they choose the animal picture. I want a lion. And it'll have a blanket. It'll have a solar light, or it'll have food for the day for their entire family. And remember, I said they're 84% illiterate. 0% of our widows can read. And so we hand them numbers at the door. I draw, and we go and look at everybody's number, you know, to see. So if somebody has a better system, I'm all ears, okay? I really, really am. And it's hard to see, but this right here, that table right there is typically where our younger widows sit. And when I say younger, they're 13, 14, 15-year-old widows, and they already have a kid or two. And the reason they're 15, 14, whatever years old is because they were the third or fourth wife of a Mzekiu, and he's died off. And in the Maasai culture, they don't remarry. So they are widows from here on out. And so it's tough. They're going to need a lot of help and a lot of, you know, care and love and all this. And so that's what we try to do. We try to involve ourselves in their life. And where they're meeting there is the school dining room, Mara Christian Academy. It'll hold about 115, 120 students, but it is very full. Real quick, what do you think? We've put smart TVs in kindergarten and fifth grade and the dining room, okay? It's crazy. We have Wi-Fi on our station. You go 100 feet outside of our fence. There's no internet. I don't know why it's pointed toward us, but we're thankful it is. But what do you think the most requested thing by a group of widows who live in Maasai Mara to watch on TV is? No. No. This is going to blow your mind, okay? The Animal Channel. And if they look outside, that's the animals. Like, these people literally run from elephants to get home at night, but they want to watch them on the TV on Wednesday night. It blows my mind. It does. Back when that whole giraffe giving birth thing was happening, that just was terrible, that's what they wanted to see on TV. I mean, it's crazy. It just really is funny. But MCA. So you saw the school has 209 kids. That is actually wrong information because January 3rd, we started seventh grade, and we added another 17 kids. So do the math, that's 220-some kids that we have now as of last week. And we've just finished. This is completely, this picture is not completely finished, but it is completely finished now. We're finally finished with the school. Our last year and a half, we was able to go back and finish. This is a big horseshoe, and we were able to finish this part and this whole front. And these are the two doors to the dining room that the ladies were in. That's where they're at. This is Mind Safari. Show more about that in a minute. But this is 6th, 7th, 8th grade and an office. And so we're running 25, 30 kids a classroom. People love the school. It's been an amazing opportunity to get involved with not only the kids, but their parents, because they come every 3 months for closing day. I have the opportunity to get up and speak to them. I share the Bible, the gospel. I try to share with them and some encouraging things. It's been fantastic, but the kids have an amazing opportunity to go here. This is the only two-story building in our entire area, okay? And if you understand what most schools are like, they're just tin roofing, walls and ceilings, if you're lucky. And then some of them are just slatted boards. When it's hot outside, you can't hardly stand to be inside. When it's raining, you can't hear anything because it's so loud. And so the kids here, none of that bothers them. And we feed them so, so well. There are literally universities in Nairobi, and I've heard this from students, they don't eat like our students do at Mara Christian Academy. I mean, we kill the goat for them every Wednesday. It is just, we really want to do well with them because it's a testimony issue. I mean, it really is. We have Christian schools over there that get these kids in, and they pack them in there, and it's just a business, and it's just terrible for the name of the gospel, to be honest with you. There's rooms over there that, I mean, this room's very huge. I mean, like this line right here, okay, to the wall, they would literally put 60 students in that right there to sleep for boarding, because the more students, the more money. And so that's church schools even. It's terrible, a terrible testimony. But anyway, we're trying to be different. There's what the backside kind of looks like. I wanted to take a drone over and get a picture up top, but they're very illegal. I didn't want to go to jail right yet, but that's what it's like coming into our mission station. As you come in the gate, you got the church up on the hill on the left. You got the school in the back. You got the kitchen right there. And then you've got a very, very nice outhouse. Nobody thinks an outhouse can be nice, but I promise you they can be. The public health officer says, those are some very nice holes, Travis. So I know I'm doing something right. And so in the back of the outhouse, we put in 2 flush toilets for our teachers. Thank you. Yeah, see, nobody's like, oh, we all have flush toilets here. That's a major deal. They don't there, okay? We were in Olaseti, another place about 16 miles from us, walking through a government school, and we went into the teacher housing. When was that? I can't even remember. Just a few months before we left. And we're walking through there, and the head teacher is leading us through the living quarters for the teachers. And we walked into a little place. It was probably 12 by 14, the house was. So this is where the, I said, one teacher? He said, no, 5. And they literally had a single bed that was bunk beds, but it's single. How many teachers stayed on one bunk? 2 per mattress on a 3-foot bed. I mean, it's just, yeah. And so, yeah, we're going to do our teachers better than that. And that's in the plans to build them teacher housing and stuff when we get back. Once again, I always tell people, nobody probably thought twice about the playground. It's America. We have everything and plenty. The playground is crazy. You don't have playgrounds where we're at in the bushes. It's just not heard of. And so we were able to make all this stuff. We built all that stuff ourselves and put it in. And the day we opened this up, literally, you couldn't see a piece of steel. Every inch was covered by a child. It was like ants on sugar, just like that. I'm not kidding. And so it's just awesome to be able, and it doesn't take much, folks. It really doesn't take a whole lot to make a difference, something like that, you know, just a little effort. So this is Mind Safari. This is inside the library, and this is always the last room I bring people to. I show them around the school. I walk down the steps, and I come in here, and they stop at the door, and they're like this, looking around. They're just understanding where we're at in America. We have this everywhere. Over there, this is, you just don't have it, okay? And so this right here is inside Mind Safari. And all of the woodwork was another young missionary, Trevor Knowles, actually did all the woodwork you see in here, built everything. And so we have computers. The kids come down. Every class comes down for 40 minutes every morning, different class times, obviously. They're working on the computers with the games. They're able to read books. I mean, it's just fantastic to be able to offer this. I wish I'd have took a picture of that wall, because we had a guy paint that, a Kenyan guy, by hand, and it's unbelievable. Like, all the stories that we've grown up with, Rapunzel and Robin Hood and Sherlock Holmes, all this stuff, they don't have a clue who that is or what that is. And so what we did is we took and painted that back wall and painted the stories in action. And there's a book in the middle that's opened, and the letters are coming out, forming into the stories. It's gorgeous. And we put the book under each one of the stories so the kids can have reference for it. Also, those two bookshelves there on the end, those are all commentaries and good solid books from the States. And we've offered for pastors in our community to come and prepare a sermon if they need to. We've had no takers, okay? But when we get back, we will be starting Mara Bible Institute. And Mara Bible Institute will be a seminary-like education for people who are interested. Right now, we have a local pastor, and we have a couple other guys, and we'll probably have one of the ladies who helps Laura teach go through that. So right now, we're at about 5 people that will be going through Mara Bible Institute, and it'll take about 5 or 6 years to get through everything, and they'll be able to eventually pick the courses they want. And this was a future plan of ours to do on the mission station. And we were going to build a building for it. We were going to have places where pastors could come and stay. And we just said, okay, we'll do that in the future, in a few years down the road. And I had a call a few months ago from one of my guys and said, no, we want to do it when you get back. And I said, okay, we can just bump it forward a little bit and we'll start now. So we won't have a facility, but I think we'll use the library in the afternoons to do it. But I asked one of those pastors months before we left, I told him what we were thinking, and I said, what do you think? Is this something that could benefit this area, the training of pastors? I mean, always that would be benefiting. But I wanted to ask him. I just don't want to go over and do anything I want to do, you know? And he said, please, please, we have so many uneducated pastors out in the bush that don't even know what they're doing. If you do this, it'll change the church in this area. I said, okay, that confirms it for me. We're going to start this when we get back. I got a phone call like 2 weeks later from that pastor. He said, I've got 19 pastors lined up. When are you starting it? I was like, oh my goodness, we're not ready for that. 19 pastors, that craziness. And so we're still not ready for that. We're just going to start small with the little group in our area that don't need places to live. They're already there. And we're going to go through it. We'll be starting, the first thing we'll be doing for about 4 months is the Apostles' Creed, laying that foundation, going through them with that. And then we'll see where it takes off to from there. But we're excited about that. Mara Children's Home. This is where I'll invite Laura up for a few minutes to talk.
They can be fed 3 times a day. They can have fresh water. And so that's what we did. And the first 2 girls that we put in the home are Sipalong and Nayan. When Sipalong Mom is the older one, and I am raised the younger. And their parents are both alcoholics. The mom is HIV positive. And Sibylong was taking care of her little sister the best that she could. And we had put them in school, but we could see that they were just really struggling. They weren't eating. They weren't kept. And so we decided, for their sake, specifically to open the home. So Nyanoi is deaf and mute and quite a fireball. But the first day that she was in the home, she was so happy. She took 7 showers. 7 hot showers, which was very difficult for us. We had to, you know, cut that back a little bit. They're precious. This is Byron, and he's the reason it's Mara Children's Home and not Mara Girls' Home, which is what we originally thought we were going to do. He's a precious boy that we've known for quite a few years. He was in our school. We learned his story was that years ago when he was little, somehow, we're not sure exactly how it happened, his mom dropped him in a fire in the back of his head. In that, his dad was very angry and took him from the mom. They came out to our community, and the dad got a job, but he got a job kind of out in the lodges, and so he left Byron in the town, and he was fending for himself. He would come to school. His dad paid for his school at first. Then we could see he wasn't kept. He wasn't being fed. It was a really bad situation. And then year and a half ago now, his dad died, really leaving Byron on his own with nothing to do. So Travis and I looked at each other, and we were like, well, I guess we're going to have a children's home, not just a girl's home. But he is very precious. He speaks really good English, which is fun for us. But he is the most gracious, thankful child I have ever known. He has been through a lot. And it's just a joy to know these kids. It's just a few stories.
Thanks, man. So that's Janet there. And we don't tell all the kids' stories. We could, but they're sad. But Janet came to us. She had ran away from a town behind us about 40 minutes. And am I on? I'm good. Oh, okay. And her dad had died, and her uncle, who she now belonged to, was going to circumcise her. And so she ran away and came to us one Saturday. And when she got there, I said, yes, we'll take you. And went and found the chief. Chief wrote a letter. She belongs to Mara Children's Home. She's now ours there. And so I show this picture because this was when the day she came, okay? This is 30 days later. I mean, it's a pretty amazing difference when you have clean water, good food, good hygiene, a place to sleep that's nice, people who love you. I mean, this is crazy, the change. She's 13 years old. And so that was 30 days later, literally. And these, I tell people all the time, these kids are messed up. They don't come from Christian homes. They don't have a Christian heritage, okay, to even come from a Christian home. And it has not been easy. It has been very challenging. In fact, the little deaf and mute girl, Nyanoi, her and Janet go at it all the time. We've nicknamed Janet Balboa. I mean, it's very tough, but they have really settled down and are starting to understand opportunity they have. They're all very thankful little people. And we left them a little mini iPad. And so we FaceTime with them all the time. It's so funny because all you ever see is up everybody's nose, you know, and it's all the kids right here. And everybody just laughs the whole time. So we have a laughing session. That's about it. But it's been great to be able to communicate with them that way. And we are very excited to get back now. It's 3 weeks till we leave, and we're excited to go see these little people again, be in their lives. And they were so worried when we left because they said, who's going to feed us? Who's going to take care of us? They call us mom and dad. And who's going to do? We said, you're taking care of, because everybody in their life has run out on them or abused them in some way, shape, or form. Their lives have been terrible. Now they've experienced love. They don't want to go back. And also, I had a medical director of Kijabi Hospital, biggest mission hospital in East Africa. He told me a couple years ago when I said, we're wanting to start a children's home. He said, I got to tell you something and be very straightforward with you, Travis. If you don't intend to follow this through, don't do it. And I was looking at him and I said, what? He said, if you take these children and you can't follow through with this, you're basically signing their death sentence. He said, because you're going to take them out of that environment. You're going to give them clean water. You're going to give them good hygiene and all these things, clean food. He said, you're basically taking them out of all that nastiness and the bacteria that their stomachs and things are used to that keeps them alive, and you're destroying that. So if this don't go through and you put them back in, he said, it will kill them. And so it's a serious deal. That was a big load on me. And so I said, well, I'm pretty confident that the Lord wants us to do this. And so far, he's been very gracious to us in that. This little girl here, her name is Joyce or Penina or Lante. She had so many names. When she came, she wouldn't speak. And all we knew was Lante. And so the kids gave her an English name, Joyce. And then when she started opening up, her name was Lante. So I just say all three of them. But anyway, we called her Joyce. And she's a sweetheart. She was from about 3 hours away from us in the bush, like even further in the bush than we are. And a good chief friend of mine called me and said, told me the situation. It was awful. But said, can you take her? And I said, absolutely. We'll take her, bring her. So he comes and we're having a big wedding at our church that day. Tons of people there. And he's standing there with her when Laura and Savannah are walking toward her. Okay. And the closer they get, the more fidgety she gets. And they get to her, she jumps up, screaming to the top of her lungs, and takes off running. She don't know where she's going, but she is out of here, buddy. And the chief's looking and didn't know what was going on. They finally go get her. Come to find out, she'd never seen a white person before. Yeah, her tribe in the bush was so deep, and she thought she was literally going to be living with us. And we love her to death, but she was scared to death. And the chief brings her back, explains things to her. We take her up. We show her the other kids in the home. She starts warming up to us. She's very quiet, but just a sweetheart when that little smile goes up. And we had her for about 3 weeks before we left. But by the time we left, she would come up. She was calling me dad and Laura mom and hugging us. And so just amazing the opportunities these little people have. And so she's a sweetie, though. Other projects. Okay. You probably think that looks like a hole in the ground. And I tell people, yes, that is a hole in the ground because that's as far as we got on it. But that right there is the future Cornerstone Health Clinic. That's what that's going to be. That's going to be a health clinic that services our community. And it's so, so needed. I've told you, I think, before the tragedies of medical in our area, and it is awful. Once again, the life expectancy is 56 for a reason. We hope that maybe we can up that by 10 or 15 years would be great. And I think good health, quality health care would do that. And this right here, the public health officer, who's a good friend of mine, he's the public health officer for the entire region of Masai Mara. And when I've shown him the plans and told him what I was wanting to do, and he said, Travis, if it's the quality of the school, this health clinic will service 20,000 people from a 50-mile radius. And I was thinking, wow. I mean, what an opportunity for the gospel as people are coming in. I mean, I'm really stoked about this, but I think it's going to be good. And we had planned to have the slabs poured and different things so the guys could be building on it while I was gone. In God's providence, that didn't happen, and I'm thankful it didn't now because as everything, the plans changed 4 times since I've been home. And so it actually worked out it didn't, but there were reasons that it didn't happen. And I'll share that in a minute. That's on the corner of our station, by the way, right down there in the thick of it. So we're excited about that. This right here is, I've told you guys before, I think there's no high schools in our area within 3 hours of us. And there was a group from London called Educating the Children, ETC. They came into Sekenani and they wanted to build a girls' high school. And they came in, they evaluated, assessed the place, and they came and they said, would you help us build a girls' high school? And this was after they started the initial stage and an American contractor started it for them and did a terrible, terrible job. And so they came after that, and you can see a building in the background. That's what he built. And they said, would you help us finish all this? And I said, yeah, I will. And so this is a 72-girl dorm. We started that last November, and we finished it in March. It's 72 girls. You can see where it's at in relation to our school. You see our school in the background? This is literally just in the field in front of us, so I can see it from my house. And so we did them a really good job. That's the inside of it. We had solar in it. The kids were just loving it. You know, 72 girls were getting this new dorm. Their other ones had cracks in it, and it was a nightmare. But anyway, we were finished in March. I said, this is fantastic. We're going to get back over to the clinic, and we're going to start pouring these slabs because I'm leaving soon. And then these folks called me, and they said, Travis, we're starting 11th grade, and we don't have an 11th grade classroom. Can you help us? And I said, no, but yes. I mean, what do? You want to help your community? And so we started building 11th grade for them, and that picture was early on. I just snapped it to show people. That is finished. They're using it now. We went ahead and poured the foundations, walls for an office in the 12th grade, which I've got stone being delivered as of yesterday. So when I hit the ground, I can finish their school for them at least. Eventually, they want to have 465 girls. And so this is just one of what will be three sections of everything. So it's got tremendous possibilities of really changing our area for the high school section of things. And we were going to build a high school. And I got to checking into it, and I've been able to avoid a lot of committees and all these things that you're supposed to have a school, which is just a disaster waiting to happen. There's nothing worse than a committee, even in church. Don't take that too. But anyway, yeah, we've been able to avoid a lot of that. And I just tell them, listen, let me have a chance and you come back in a year and see if we're failing. You know, we're just not doing this. It's just power grabs and all this craziness. And so with a secondary or high school, you have to have, by law, a committee, and it has to be five people from five different towns. I said, forget that junk. We don't even want to do that. So we passed on that, and we're thankful we can help them be able to do that. Important life lesson. So I've been going for a while, so I'm going to wrap this up. Normally, I build this up to make it very spiritual. It's not at all, because I like to end on the light side of things. But it is a very important life lesson that I learned this year, okay? When you're building playground equipment, okay, you got to be very careful when you're just testing it out to see how the kids are going to do. Yeah. Laura just happened to be filming this for some weird reason. But you see in the middle there, this is really on nothing. And so as you can imagine, it just spells disaster, okay? Yep. Oh, yeah. So always know where your center's at, what I tell people, and what it's fastened to. But yeah, that's kind of funny. And then the very end, Straight Up Missions, as many of you know, we left our other mission organization, and in last January, we started Straight Up Missions. We just wanted to get missions back into the hands of where God said it should be. Where is that? The church. Okay, church missions has always been church-centric, not organization-centric, and we're just really hoping that we can help the churches do that again. It's going to be their responsibility, and we're just kind of there in the shadows. And currently, we have a family who's in Romania, Ken and Monica Luce. They've been there 17 years. They joined SUM, and we have John and Becky Woodworth, who were in Kenya for 17 years, and now they're coming back to be with us in Sekenani. And so we're very, very happy about that, to have partners after the last couple years, because it is so difficult with all that's going on. I teach about five times a week, Sunday school, baptism class, preaching church on Sunday, Thursday morning devotions, chapel service on Friday. It's just, it's too much, as I think any pastor would say. That's a little bit much. You're going to do a lot of stuff and not do anything well if you're not careful. And so we're so thankful to have partners coming in who will take some of that load and be with us. We have two other families right now that are interested in going overseas. One of them just sent me an application 2 days ago. He's a chiropractor. She's a nurse practitioner. What a combination, you know, to run the clinic. And so we're seeing God provide and doing very, very good things, and he's always faithful. And so we're just thankful for that. But I think that's about it. I tell people all the time, we were in Maine for 6 days at a church, spoke 9 times, and every time was different for an hour. So there is so much going on. That's just kind of, you know, breezing over the highlights. But I didn't even mention about the Muslims that we have coming to school now. You guys can continue to pray for us about that. We do have 4 Muslim kids coming to Mara Christian Academy. I mean, that's a big deal. 2 years ago, the little girl came. Her mother called. She said, we want the little girl to wear the burqa. I said, sorry, can't do it. This is Christian school. Even if you're a Coptic Christian, you're not going to wear something on your head. That's just our policies. She said, then we're going to have to take her out of the school. Some of the men were giving her a hard time in town. I said, well, that's very unfortunate for her. I drove straight to town, found a bunch of the men, really gave them a hard time about how they'd cost this little girl an amazing future. They said, oh, no, no, not us, Travis. We didn't do that. Little girl's still there today. And then earlier in the year in January, I go down to one of the little shops. There's three Somali kids, third, fourth, and fifth grade, sitting in the back of the little store. And when the people would come in, they'd go, psh, 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 just like that, everybody walking in. Didn't speak Swahili, didn't speak English, only spoke Somali. And so they put them in another church school, which is terrible. It's an awful. Anyway, the kids were making fun of them, calling them Al-Shabaab, different things. Second term rolls around in April. Lo and behold, here come these three kids to Mara Christian Academy. And it's been no secret with the Muslims who we are, what we do. I've been very vocal about that for years. And day one, one of the teachers came and said to me, Travis, the third or fourth grader, I can't remember, he's laying his head down and he refuses to listen to the CRE class, Christian Religious Education. I said, okay. I ran straight to town, found his dad. I said, Hadit, his name's Hadit. I said, Hadit, you don't have to believe in Jesus, but your kid does have to take a test at the end of the year. Oh, no, that's okay, Travis. That's fine. Hadn't had a problem out of him again since. But the next week, remember I said we kill a goat every Wednesday for the kids? Killed a goat Wednesday as normal. Thursday morning, I'm in town. The dad was kicking up dust, like literally mad, angry. And I said, what's going on? He said, my son ate the meat, halal, you know, that whole deal. And in Islam, another Muslim can't eat the meat unless it was cut by another Muslim. The throat was cut by another Muslim. I said, I'm so sorry. You know, no special diets, no this or that. He made it. He lived. I mean, that's what I said. And of course, that didn't help. And then, so he said, can you please just let him come home for lunch on Wednesday? And I said, I have no problem with that as long as he's back for classes. And so we've had no problems out of them. I have a lot of the Muslim friends over there call me two or three times a week since I've been home. And just a great ministry there with those guys as well. That's an opportunity. That's pretty much it. I won't keep you guys any longer unless you have any questions or anything.
Al-Shabaab and that whole issue, do y'all have any concerns in your school? That's an area of concern for me in Kenya and Somalia, and that whole issue that's gone on there with that group.
Yeah, in Masai Mara, it's not so bad. I mean, I honestly fear animals more than I do people where we're at. We have 75 Muslims in our community now, so they are coming in more and more.
Are they mainly from Somalia?
Yes, mainly from Somalia. And the interesting thing is when I get close to one of them, because I'm in the shops a lot, and we battle about who Jesus is all the time. It's not like here where everybody's offended about everything and scared to death of Muslims and stuff. No, we battle for 40 minutes. Next day, everybody's friends. I mean, it's just how it goes. But when I start getting close to some of them, they move them back up on the Somali border where it's very dangerous for them. So there's good reason to not get close to me. They've given them a good reason. But I have a lot of good friends there. They have condemned what Al-Shabaab has done. But I told them, I know whose side you'd be on if they came in here. It'd be very obvious. You know, you'd be right on their side. But our community really is good. And very protective of the school because it's their school. I mean, I built it, but it's theirs. And they say this is the community school. And right before we left, a bunch of the chiefs and other people, they got the Muslim community together because there had been some intel that had come in that there was going to be some issues. And they said, we will not have it here. And the Maasai are serious. They're a peaceful people, but they won't have it. And the community behind us, about 12 miles, ran all of the Muslims out and shut their mosques down and everything. And I didn't know that at the time, but I was standing in our town in the path to go to the mosque, which is, it's a tin building. It's not like one of these glorious mosques you think about. And I was standing with another pastor. He's terrible. I won't even call him a pastor. He thinks he's a pastor in our community. And he starts telling them, we're going to kick you out of here soon. And I was laughing because I thought he was joking. He wasn't joking. And they said, they kicked them out in the town behind us. You're next. We're not going to let you be here any longer. And we're running you out of here. So I find myself right in the middle of this all of a sudden. And the three Muslim guys looked at me and said, it's not right, Travis. It's not right, is it? And I said, no, it's not. It's. But let me tell you why people are so afraid of you. And so I explained to them about their religion, which I'm sure they knew already, and the different laws in Kenya where Muslims can run into a mosque and no one can go in and search or do anything like that. They don't speak the language. This is why people fear you and want you gone. Not to mention, this is what your religion says. We did all that, but I said, no, you have the right to worship. It's a free country. You have religious freedom. And so it was really strange, but for some reason, I don't know, they really appreciated that. And so I've been on their good side, really, since all that. So it's always an issue, anytime, anywhere you go, but I'm not too worried about it yet. Yeah. Ed?
You say you fear animals, which is a healthy fear, I would imagine, given what you see there. But where are you most vulnerable to attack? Is it night, early morning type?
For animals?
Yeah, for animals.
It's typically in the dark. It's usually, we always tell people, if you're a runner in Masai Mara and you come to visit, only food runs, you know, so don't be out at night. That's when they normally eat, or in the dusk. And so, but we had 2 months where we just had nothing but elephants on our station, and now they're back. There's just really nothing you can do. They're dangerous. Our biggest fight right now with an animal is baboons. Just unbelievable, these things. And now we've got 2 loners. They don't travel together, but they don't travel with a congress. That's a group of baboons, for you who don't know, is a congress. It just is. And so it works, I'm telling you. But we have 2 massive males. They don't even travel with each other or with the congress. And so they're huge. They're really, really big males. One of our children's home kids was dumping garbage in the hole, and it come up and slapped her, you know, drew blood. They come in now, and they will come in my fuel store where I keep the dog food. They'll come out with a sack of dog food on their shoulder running up the steps. I mean, these things are such a nuisance. And they sit there and eat the dog food right out of the bowl. I was talking to some guys in our community and told Tigas, you got to take care of this problem, you know, take care of this. It's like the mafia. Go take care of this because I can't. And so he comes up with the poison-tipped arrows, and they never come around for some reason. But I was talking to some guys in the community, and they said these things are just worse than they've ever seen. They're having to lock their doors when they leave. One of them went in one of the huts before we left, put on a backpack, one of the kids' backpacks, and ran out with the backpack on its back, the baboon. And so they're bad news. I'm really hoping when we get back, there's been no... All my dogs died while we were gone. Some of them were 7 years old. I don't know what happened. But we've had no animals. We've had no food. We've had no garbage. We've had nothing. I'm hoping they've moved on because every day is a battle. Laura's out here throwing Maasai Rungus at these things. I mean, they're looking around the corner. Oh, she threw it. Let's go on now. I mean, it's just, they get in the children's home. And I got video of this, but they get in the children's home, and they're swinging through the rafters. They make a mess. And the video I actually have is very funny because we got all the kids out, and it was me and Trevor Knowles and Tigas. And Tigas is shooting these poison-tipped arrows at this thing as it's swinging through the rafters. And I'm getting the kids out, and I got everybody out. And then I looked around, and the kids had locked us in the room with this baboon. There was no escape. And so we got that settled. And then it was so wild to watch this. Nobody would believe it if you didn't have video footage. Tigas would pull back and shoot the arrow. And this thing's like 25 feet up and away in the peak. And it would catch the arrow and throw it back down. It's just really unbelievable. And finally, he got one, hit it right there. And it's kind of, you know, drunk at this point, swinging through the rafters. And I'm like, let it go. We don't want to deal with this stinky thing in the house. And it goes off and then eventually dies. But that happens often. too often. So we are really put out. And they come in like 40 or 50 at a time, the other ones. So they just raid you. It's really ridiculous. But that's our biggest. And it's any time of the day with them. Typically, the worst is on Sunday morning. I'm sitting there trying to get ready. And, you know, Laura's out here and she said they're eating my pumpkins. They're bouncing on the garden net, playing with each other. One's in. They figured out how to take the bolt out of the door, open the door. And so I go out with a shotgun and it's Sunday morning. There's no noise anywhere. And I go boom and it goes woo, woo over the ranger camp and all these protection people are hearing this shot. And I crawl back in the house. This is my Sunday mornings, you know? So I can't do that anymore, you know? But nothing like getting ready to go to church, you know, with baboons. But, my goodness. Anything else?
Your life sounds exhausting.
It is. Yeah.
Do you take any energy supplements?
No. No, not really. Probably need some. I'm feeling it, but it's awesome. I would way rather be there than here. Here is very exhausting for us. It really is very exhausting. Traveling. We was in California. We were in Maine. All over Pennsylvania, California. 7 days later, we're in Miami. We've been all over the place. I'd way rather fight the baboons than the Americas. Yeah. Anybody else? All right. Well, I got new prayer cards and stuff. I even have some of the children's home, so be sure to take one or two or whatever. And keep up with us. We typically put more on Facebook, but I've tried now when I put out an update on Facebook to send it out in email because I realize not everybody's on Facebook. So we'll try to do that. If you want emails, let us know and we'll send them out to you. All right.